Light the beam.
This is the Rich Eisen Show.
What are you waiting for, huh?
Live from the Rich Eisen Show studio in Los Angeles.
Get it done with Dak and CeeDee Lamb.
Absolutely. I mean, think about this.
But while you're waiting, it just gets more expensive while you're waiting.
I don't get that either.
What am I waiting for?
Earlier on the show, senior writer for the MMQB, Albert Breer. Coming up, former Yankees radio voice, John Sterling. Michigan cornerback, Mike Sainristel. CBS Sports and Turner Sports broadcaster, Ian Eagle. And now, it's Rich Eisen.
Hour number two of the Rich Eisen Show is on the air. We're going to be in Detroit next week. 1 week from today, we will be in the middle of hour two of our first of 3 days at the NFL Draft in Detroit. I'll be hosting, obviously, the NFL Draft coverage on NFL Network Thursday night, Friday night, and all day Saturday. Picks one through Mr. Irrelevant, which I guess we got to stop calling that draft pick that after Brock Purdy was almost the Super Bowl champion quarterback this year. Right. At any rate, we're going to be there. Actually, at this point next week, our in-studio guest is slated to be J.J. McCarthy, hey, who I believe our first guest in this hour on this Wednesday show knows very well because he is a national champion Michigan Wolverine himself and one of my favorite players to have watched play football at my alma mater ever. Because of what he made himself and what he has become and what he is a top draft choice in the National Football League draft. Mike Sainristel here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, Mike?
I'm doing great, Rich. Thank you for having me today. Super excited to speak with you.
Same here. So where are you right now? You're done with your top 30 visits, right? Where are you right now, Mike?
I'm back in Michigan.
Okay. Is this and you are fresh off of which visits? Who can you tell me who you chatted with, Mike? Who did you see in this draft?
I visited Tampa. Tampa, Detroit, and New England.
Okay, so you don't have to go very far to visit Detroit.
No, just 20 minutes up the road.
Okay, and so which teams did you meet with at the combine? Did you meet with all of them at the combine as well?
For the most part, I had 8 formal interviews, but for the most part, I met with pretty much every team because I didn't go to any bowl games.
And so when you met with these teams, did you get a sense of any teams that were particularly keen on you, Mike, at all?
So it's funny because, you walk out those interviews, you feel like you killed it. And, most teams will tell you, we really want you, hope we get you. And often it's kind of just like, you have the power to do it. So just, just do it. But at the end of the day, every team I met with, I believe I left a good impression. That was my goal, just allow them to, see who I am as a person, go in there, have a good meeting and, just do everything necessary to, want them to bring me into their organization.
And I'm just going to take a stab at this. Before going to New England, do you chat with Jabril Peppers? Do you have a relationship with him in any way, shape, or form, Mike?
Yeah, Jabril and I were cool. We're cool.
Okay. Did you chat with him before going there? Because, obviously you could put on the same uniform as him.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't talk. I didn't let him know I was going there, nor did I tell any of the Michigan guys there, Uche, Stuber, but I did see all 3 of them when I was there visiting, and it was good to see them there. I never played with Jabril. I actually grew up watching Jabril's highlights, and then him coming to Michigan, I came to Michigan. It was cool to see somebody I looked up to. Well, and then, Uche, of course, Stuber, of course, and my former teammates, it was good to see them. And there's a very high possibility I do end up teammates with those guys.
Well, so, and that's your hometown, isn't it? I mean, that's your spot. I mean, you went to high school just outside of Charleston.
Yeah, Mike, right? That was one of the things I told us the coaches was, yeah, it's kind of surreal to be here. I grew up a longtime Patriots fan. I had a great childhood of sports with Patriots, Red Sox, Bruins, Celtics. I had a very hometown, hometown guy type of vibe while I was there. So it was good being there.
So how did you wind up at Michigan? How did you get recruited there, Mike?
So I got offered by Michigan my junior year. Prior to committing to Michigan, I was committed to Virginia Tech. The two coaches on offensive defense both ended up taking jobs elsewhere. So I kind of was, you know, in a spot where I was like, I don't want to go into an unstable situation. Let me reconsider my options. Let me make sure I'm really doing, you know, making the right choice. Coach Harbaugh and Coach Brown, whenever they visited the area, not even just my school, but the area, they would always stop by my high school office and greet my mother, who worked as a secretary down there. And, you know, for me, it was important, not important, but it was good to see that the coaches cared about my family, and they were already building those relationships. So to see, you know, see that, and then, you know, having a conversation with them, Coach Harbaugh gave me an offer when I visited Michigan. The campus was great. You know, my parents were big on academics, so we knew I was going to get good education coming to Michigan. And then lastly, like, you know, I was going to be playing top tier football at a, you know, very historic program. That was something I wanted to be a part of, and, you know, win a national championship here. So everything about being here was right. The, you know, the team at the time, they treated me like family already. Staff treated me like family. So I just knew this was the place that I wanted to be.
So when you got there, though, is it true there was a fight between, not actual fisticuffs, but a push-pull between the offensive and defensive coaches to get you to play on that side of the football?
Right? Yes, that is true. That is true. And then Coach Harbaugh ultimately left the decision up to me to make on what side I wanted to be on.
So why did you choose the defensive side of the football?
I chose defense.
Yeah.
4 years after. Four years. I mean offense.
Okay. So you chose offense to start, right?
Yeah.
And as a matter of fact, your first touchdown was against Notre Dame, by the way. Great school to score against. That's one of my favorite for a Michigan Wolverine to score against him is, is Notre Dame. But so how did you wind up defense then, Mike, eventually?
Just every year, I kind of would just joke around with the defensive staff about putting me on defense. COVID year, there was a time where they needed people who, you know, seemed like they could play two ways, practice, because we had guys who were sick or hurt. Then my junior year, I kind of got a little bit more serious with the jokes because I felt like I wasn't producing the way I believed I could have at receiver. And then, you know, going into my senior year, Coach Harbaugh called me and said, Mikey, you know, with Dax Hill leaving, I definitely think you're a guy that could fill in the nickel spot. If you don't like it, you can always go back to receiver. And, you know, for me, the type of attitude I have is I'm going to do whatever it takes to help this team. So as soon as he hung up, I texted Steven Adegoke, who was a GA at the time. And the following day, I was upstairs learning the playbook.
You know, they always say in the NFL, whenever a cornerback drops a football or a defensive back drops a football, say that's why they play defensive back, not wide receiver. So now you can have a different, you can have a whole different perspective, Mike Sanders, still. Don't you think?
100%.
Okay. And then, you know, here's what I'll never forget about you. In the horseshoe, after Michigan had beaten Ohio State for the first time in forever, the year before, in the horseshoe, you jump up on a bench and you go into the fourth quarter, you put up the number four. And seriously, as a Wolverine fan sitting at home, as a diehard Michigan guy sitting at home, I saw that and I just thought to myself, you know what? I think they've got this, because nobody expected you to win two in a row, let alone go into the Ohio State and beat them there after the year before. That was supposed to be an outlier. I'm wondering where your leadership skills come from, Mike.
You know, I'm definitely somebody who's action first. So, you know, for me, it's always important to, you know, show my teammates I'm somebody who's going to do as I say. And, you know, I think naturally it's easier to gravitate towards that as, you know, another person, because no one wants to be around, you know, somebody who's just always talking and they have nothing to show for it. And one thing Coach Herb would always say to us is, what you do speak so loudly, I can't hear what you say. And, you know, that resonates with me. And, you know, for me, it's just like, I don't expect you to do something that I don't expect of myself. And so I'm always going to, you know, my actions are always going to match up with the words that I say. And, you know, if you're feeling that, then you're going to gravitate towards it. If not, then, you know, you're just not meeting the standard that I have for myself and for the team, you know?
And when did things kind of switch where you started believing that this team could win it all. I mean, when did that – did it start with Aiden Hutchinson the year before the moment I was just referring to? When did that click, do you think, Mike, at Michigan?
You know, I believe Aiden Hutchinson's year was the year that we knew we were definitely a great football team, and we knew that the culture was shifting. I do believe that there was a little bit complacency after we beat Ohio State. You know, it was kind of like we did what no one expected us to do. We beat Ohio State. We're good with that. Like, we're satisfied. The following year was, okay, let's take it more serious going to this playoff game. We let it slip, you know, slip right through our hands. And the following year, so this past season, was when it was like, all right, 2 years in a row, like, we know what mistakes we made. We know what it feels like to be there. What is the next step? What else can we do to get over that hump? And really for us, it was just being able to build good habits in the off season and fall in love with the little details. Because we knew we had talent. We knew the coaching was great. It was just how consistent can we be day in, day out to make sure that when it comes to that late in the season, we're not making early mistakes, you know, going into those games. We're not, we're not allowing teams to capitalize on the things that we do wrong. You know what I mean? And we wanted to be the team to capitalize on other people's mistakes, like it was done to us the 2 years before. So it was just important for us to make sure we fall in love with the little details, because we knew we had everything in our favor. And just as the year went on, the camaraderie that we were able to continue building, it was just like, there's nothing that's going to stop this team from, you know, reaching our goal.
Mike Sanders still here on the Rich Eisen Show from Michigan, one of the top defensive prospects available in this year's draft. And I don't care who knows it, right here on the Rich Eisen Show. So a couple of narratives to hit you before we send you on to your rest of your pre-draft week, Mike. What do you say to people say that there's an asterisk on Michigan's title because of everything was going down with the scandal and the what wound up sidelining Coach Harbaugh for three games and putting Sherrone Moore in that seat? Mike, what do you say to that?
I don't remember when it was I've said this. I do remember saying that no matter how good or how bad Michigan is doing, nobody wants to see us win. I feel like that it's always been that way. I feel like, you know, Coach Harbaugh is hated in the college football world for whatever reason. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a great coach. I love playing for him. So, you know, there's no matter what other people think, you're not going to take away what we did from us this past season. So, you know, sucks to be you if you want to believe that narrative. We're happy with what we did, and, you know, we got the job done.
All right. Another narrative is that J.J. McCarthy shouldn't be traded up for, or shouldn't be that high of a draft choice, because he wasn't asked to do much, and thus he can't do what a quarterback in the NFL, certainly a top five draft choice, is. You played with him. You watched him grow into the man that he is and champion that he is. What do you say when you hear that, Mike?
I actually say that's exactly why I think he deserves to be traded up for, because – I mean, at the end of the day, right, you don't always know who you're getting when you pick somebody. You know, the first pick of the draft could always pan out to, you know, not have a successful career. It's just, you never know. So really, I believe that JJ, the stuff that he didn't show is exactly why I'd want to, you know, draft him, because he has so much more to show. He has so much upside. He has, you know, his ceiling is very high. If you watch what he did for us, when he needed to create, he did so. When he needed to run, he did so. And, you know, yes, he did manage our games very well. He was a great quarterback in the system that we had. And going against him every day in practice, I've seen the things that he's able to do. I know what his arm talent looks like. I know how well he can, you know, create plays and extend plays. I know the type of poise he has to win a game. And lastly, the one thing you can never take away from him is the fact that he's a winner. He's an ultimate competitor. He's growing into continuing to be a leader. So, you know, why wouldn't you draft J.J. McCarthy as a, you know, top quarterback in this class?
And then let's talk about you before I send you on your day. You're going to be a dad soon? Is that a true story? You're a dad-to-be?
I am. Actually, I did notice your best dad ever sign right there.
Oh, yeah. If you need tips, any pointers, I'm here for you. You know?
Please share.
Oh, gosh. You're whenever you want. I've got tons of them, but I mean, you know, you just in the you're now in the position of just having to be supportive and being there right now. You know what I mean? How long is your girlfriend in right now?
We're 30, going on 32 weeks. So okay. We're 2 months away. So in 2 months, actually, our daughter should be here.
Okay. So you're in training camp for being a father before going into training camp as being a professional football player. Basically what you're saying.
Exactly.
All right, so you just got to be supportive, just got to be there. Obviously being there the day of the birth, that is that's paramount, but you knew that already. And then just learn how to put in a car seat. What else, Chris, you want to help out here? Mike, he's got a four-year-old at home. What do you think?
Basically you're a utility infielder. Anything your partner needs, yes. Get up in the middle of the night, yes. Food, good takeout, groceries, clean the house, dishes. Yes.
Do you know if it's a boy or a girl? Do you know yet?
It's a girl.
Okay, it's a girl. Girl dad. It's the greatest. It's awesome. Does she? And the first thing that she's going to have to know is she goes to the University of Michigan, right, Mike? Like that's the one. That's the first thing. Correct.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Okay. Excellent. Now, what last question for you. What will a team get if they draft Mike Sangerstil?
They're getting a complete football player, a guy who, you know, plays the game of football the way it should be played. They're getting a leader. They're getting, you know, somebody who's going to do whatever it takes to help the team win, no matter where he's needed. Again, the ultimate competitor. And again, the guy who wants to, you know, win Super Bowls and, you know, create a legacy at the, you know, organization that he's going to be in.
Okay. Fantastic. And they get a champion, right? A national champion?
Exactly.
A leader, yes, a best? That's what they get. Fantastic. Hey, Mike, thank you, not just for zooming into the show, but I will always say this to any, and I've got Chris Jenkins on tomorrow's program. That's a beautiful thing. I'm not just being self-serving by having Michigan Wolverines on. There were 18 of you at the combine, you know, and they're national champions. So this is a legit a conversation to be having before a draft. But hey, thank you for performing the way that you did and comporting yourself the way that you do. It means a lot, man. It means a lot to so many of us that graduated before you. And thank you and congrats in advance.
Thank you, Rich. I appreciate you.
Right back at you. And I'll see you. And by the way, maybe you'll be a teammate of Aiden Hutchinson in a week.
We'll see.
Wouldn't that be something else? Mm-hmm. For sure. Mike, thanks for the time. Congrats in advance of being a dad and being an NFL player. Thank you.
Thank you.
You bet. That's Mike Sangerstil here on the Rich Eisen Show. That's what you're going to get. You're going to get a champ. New Englander.
New Englander.
The Patriots reaching out.
By the way. Let's go.
Him next to that kid you drafted last year.
Christian Gonzalez. Let's go. And Jabril.
Dude.
Loaded defense. We know the defense is loaded.
That's a back end. They signed Kyle Duggar, right?
Re-signed Duggar. He's back.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Sorry, you were saying?
I just don't know if Mike realizes how much joy he really has brought to your life.
Well, I told him at the combine. I think I embarrassed him in front of other people. To be honest.
You marked out a little bit over him.
I might have put him off.
You definitely didn't put him off. He showed up today.
Oh, no, I did. That's true. He showed up today. Chris Jenkins tomorrow. You know, he's his dad, longtime Panther. He was a Jet for a while, too. Mm-hmm. And, boy, he was just so good in the middle of that defensive line for Michigan. He's tomorrow. When we come back here on the Rich Eisen Show, we'll dive a little bit into Bill Belichick, that story that ESPN put out there, and how he will loom over the NFC East before the voice of the Yankees, John Sterling, joins us. Hey, folks, it's time for the NFL draft, which means for me, I need a good night's sleep, because if I don't have one, just not myself. You know the deal. You know exactly how important it is to have quality sleep. It's a game changer for all of us. So Sleep Number helps me. My Sleep Number setting is 60. My wife's setting is 70. We both get a great night's sleep because we could adjust the firmness of our mattress on each side. Improve your quality sleep because Sleep Number learns how you sleep thanks to their smart beds and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com. Let's talk O'Reilly Auto Parts, people. Or as you might know from their jingle, O'Reilly Auto Parts. They're in the business of keeping your car on the road. O'Reilly Auto Parts offers friendly, helpful service and the parts knowledge you need for all your maintenance and repairs. Because you know when you need your car fixed, you need somebody who knows what they're talking about and is helpful, has a smile on their face, and gets you back on the road. They've got thousands of parts and accessories in stock, either in-store or online, so you never have to worry if you're in a jam. The team at O'Reilly Auto Parts can test your battery for free in or out of your car. If it needs to be replaced, they'll help you just find the right battery for your vehicle. Need your windshield wipers replaced, a brake light fix, or a quick service? They'll help you find the right part or point you to the nearest local repair shop for help. Whether you're a car aficionado or an auto novice, you will find the employees at O'Reilly Auto Parts knowledgeable, helpful, and the best of all, friendly. Stop by O'Reilly Auto Parts today or visit us at O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen. That's O'ReillyAuto.com/Eisen.
It was 96, and it was the week before the Michigan-Ohio State game. You know, I got to practice. I wasn't feeling well. My back was a little tight, and I told the trainer, you know, my back is not feeling right. He was like, oh, you know what? Don't worry about it. So, you know, we're in practice, and he calls me over a couple of times.
Coach Carr.
Yeah. You know, he was like, you know, you're not paying attention. He said, hey, if you're not going to pay attention, then you can just leave. And I turned around. I walked out the field, walked into the locker room, put my clothes back on. I walked to the dorm, and I was like, man, I'm transferring. I'm out of here.
You walked out on Coach Carr and Michigan practice, Ohio State week, saying, I'm leaving.
I'm gone. Going to Coach Carr's office. You know, he asked me a question. He's like, you think you justified yourself by walking off the field? And I was like, yeah. I was like, I don't think you had to make an example out of me. He was like, you know what? Well, you're not playing this week. I walked back down to Vance Beffer's office. He was like, told you. Just go down there and just apologize. You know what? He picks up the phone. Da-da-da-da-da-da. I don't know what he's doing.
Uh-huh.
Miss Woodson, I told this boy to go down there and apologize, and that's all he had to do. Here, you talk to him. So I'm talking to my mom. She was like, what's the problem? I'm like, you know, my coach wants me to go down there and apologize. I'm like, I'm not apologizing. She was like, Charles. She said, I understand. I know you're mad and you're angry. She said, if you're not going to apologize for yourself, then do it for me.
Oh, boy.
Come on, man. So I said, okay. I get up. I go down.
Did it for mom.
I did it for mom, man. Apologized to coach. He said, well, you know what? Good, Charles. You're playing this week.
All on our archives right there on the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network. Sitting at the Rich Eisen Show desk, furnished by Grainger. With supplies and solutions for every industry, Grainger has the right product for you. Call clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Guys, we have an update. We have an update from the Metroplex.
Ooh.
From Frisco, Texas, home of the Dallas Cowboys front office.
Dateline.
Home office of Jerry Jones. There has been a free agent signing.
Oh, yeah. No.
His name is Royce Freeman, running back.
Oh, wow.
We now have six on the NFL.com free agency tracker of the Dallas Cowboys.
Congratulations, DJ.
Jerry.
How's this breaking? I told you this an hour and a half ago.
You got two backup running backs. Congratulations.
Told you, we don't do Teslas and Kias and Hondas. We do Rolls Royces, Maseratis. Ah. That's what we do.
Maria, I see.
The
All right.
famed Rico and Royce
hit them with the backfield.
R&R.
Awesome.
Rest and relaxation does not stand.
Anytime you can get third string running backs, you got to do it.
Rico and Royce.
This takes a nice chunk out of the pot.
And a little deuce coup.
Yeah.
Oh, good song.
Hey, huh?
Good right. song.
Little don't, Beach Boys for
Beach
you.
Beach Boys, Rich. I like it.
Come yeah. on.
That's right. Pick 56. Hey. We'll get another running back.
Listen.
We'll get a starter.
We'll
probably
see.
Troy Benson out of Florida State. I don't want to put our business out there
okay.
like I just did.
But okay.
Sure, write that down. Remember I said it at 10:25.
So the Cowboys are going to get
I'm gonna write it down.
Xavier Worthy to start.
No, that is not what I
okay.
said.
Okay. No, that's what Peter Schrager said that.
Here, coach.
Amarius Mims, Georgia.
What's going to happen when you don't get any of those people?
I don't know.
That won't happen.
They'll get a running back, and you never know. I mean, third round run, like, choose. I mean, the Chiefs won back-to-back championships with a seventh round running back.
I need some medical personnel on hand in Detroit for TJ.
Well, you remember last time I flipped out during a draft?
I was just going to say, so mad they took Leighton Vander Esch.
Yeah, TJ, we were right next to TJ.
He turned out to be pretty darn good.
Yeah. And I apologize for that.
Hey, I really wanted Calvin Ridley, and we're glad that
the Cowboys do draft well. You've got to give it up. They do draft well. I mean, the reason why they're paying CeeDee Lamb and they're paying Micah Parsons and they're paying Dak Prescott is because they drafted him.
Yep.
And they have balled out. The question is, again, the concept of all in and sticking with the roster and supplementing it with straight up bargain basement free agents and re-signing your own. And I know that sounds like you're denigrating.
I am not denigrating.
Excuse me. Bargain basement free agents sometimes turn into Pro Bowlers.
Exactly.
And draft choices turn into Pro Bowlers or all pros. They can do that. And you have to see how it works out this fall, because the way the Cowboys approached getting one and done by the Packers is to stick with everybody and not extend anybody. Although Peter Schrager says they're going to have to get something done with Dak and CeeDee Lamb. And Micah Parsons is also not at the current workout program, although he wasn't last year either. He does his own workouts. But CeeDee Lamb's not there. And it will all be about going all in on everybody and everybody having the pressure put upon them to do what no Cowboys team has done since the mid-90s. And if they don't, they're not there anymore. And that includes the head coach. And ESPN.com putting out a deep dive today as to how Bill Belichick, greatest coach ever, okay, and one of the greatest, if you need that parsing for an argument sake, did not get a job in this cycle. And the article says the Cowboys never really considered Belichick, despite Jerry Jones and Belichick being friendly and tight, because Jerry Jones decided to stick with Mike McCarthy in, I guess what, the 24-48-hour period right after being one and done by the Packers.
Yeah, Jerry made a quick decision.
Quick decision to keep him.
Yeah.
And this article says the Eagles actually and Howie Roseman give a sort of how you doing checkup call on Bill.
Yep.
They stuck with Nick Sirianni after they got one and done as well. And then there's the Giants, where Belichick, as we know, made his bones as defensive coordinator in the Parcells era and also special teams coordinator. He was Mike Mayock's first position coach when Mayock first strolled in there back in the 80s for the Giants. And so here's how it's going to work. Bill Belichick's going to get a job in the media somewhere. I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah, that article made it seem like
it's
it was
happening.
Imminent with Omaha to do something with Peyton Manning's team.
By the way, and he if he wants to trust anybody in the media business, one of my first memories of the Pro Bowl is watching Belichick when he was a coach in the Pro Bowl, one of the first early years of NFL Network, basically commandeer a table at the pool bar and sit there with Peyton Manning, and they talked ball for hours. I mean, when I say hours, that's what they did. He and Peyton Manning, I'm sure, have an affinity and a respect
and Peyton Manning's Omaha Productions is a, you know, a new industry standard. They signed a new, a 9-year contract extension with ESPN.
Yeah.
So that would make sense. And as a matter of fact, I see Bill on the screen right now. Interestingly enough.
I know.
And so there's lots to talk about that Bill is, you know, no doubt going to say. And no doubt Bill has a media career in him.
Without question.
It's going to go where he will be the guy that I saw on the set of NFL 100 who has stories for days and information for in cuticles that the rest of us don't have in our full body. And coaches and owners will see this guy on the screen and suddenly go, oh, so he's not the guy that we all thought he could be to blow up my organization. He plays well with others. I see him. I have enjoyed his thoughts. He's really intelligent. He's really this, that, the other thing. Have him in for a meeting, and then boom. He's going to have a gig. I think so. If that's what he wants. If that's what he wants. Not everyone's going to win the NFC East. Only one team can do it. And one would think, you know, if all three teams or four teams make the, you know, somehow make the playoffs, somebody in the NFC East is going to be left feeling less than. And if he looms over the NFC East the entire season,
oh, man.
Talk about a delicious storyline to add on to the Dallas Cowboys all-in season. Or the retooling of the Philadelphia Eagles season, or the New York Giants doing whatever the heck's going to be happening with Daniel Jones or whoever they draft at the quarterback position if they do that or whatnot. Because he's going to have a stupendous media year. That's going to happen. So be on the lookout. Bolo for B squared. Bolo.
I rue the day Geppetto Jerry said those two words, man. I just
all that, in.
That's looming over the whole season too.
But again, let's be honest. The dude, and that's his name going forward, is Geppetto Jerry. He knows how to manipulate the media to have us and everyone else talking about Dallas 12 months out of the year. I'm sure
that's not always a good thing.
But no, it's not good.
That shouldn't
bad,
be.
It is what it. What do they say? There is no bad
publicity.
Publicity.
No bad press.
No bad press. So
that shouldn't be the end goal, though.
Shouldn't be, but
because the best press is, hey, we had a parade.
Yeah, but we haven't had a parade since the mid-90s, and yet Dallas is still the most talked about team. So, again, I don't know, and I've said this before, I don't know if winning a Super Bowl is a priority with them anymore. Because it sure doesn't seem like it is.
I think it absolutely does.
Has to.
Wasn't that his line when he came on this show?
Am I wrong for saying this?
When he came on this show, last year. It was the year before last when he said that, I remember the night before our third Super Bowl win, I told the Lord that if I got this one, I wouldn't be asking for another. And I'd like to redo that deal, is what he said.
Yep.
Oh, he does. Yeah. Oh, he wants one. He doesn't want to be sitting there with the camera zooming in on him on Fox where it looks like he's swallowing in his own vomit while somebody comes into his building with their young quarterback and a bunch of receivers you've never heard of and put up 27 unanswered in the first half. He doesn't want that. You know, obviously he wants his team to be talked about. He wants his team's value to be through the roof. He wants all of that.
But
he wants a championship. And again, what will be looming over the entire season, as we've been talking about for weeks, is the sense of all in and the lack of supplementing the roster that clearly had some holes. When it came to it, that's what playoff baseball does. That's what the playoffs do in any sport, especially the National Football League, is it exposes the weaknesses that didn't get exposed by lesser opponents throughout the regular season. And when it's always funny, if you have a left fielder that can't throw or a left hander in the bullpen that can't throw strikes, the ball will find that person in left field and the left-hander will be on the mound in a high-leverage situation. If you can't run the football, you can't stop the run. If your quarterback needs X, Y, and Z to happen in order to be successful, if your wide receiver needs something extra to help him get a free release, those things aren't going to happen in the playoffs. And you need to find a different way to succeed, whether it's coaching, scheme, or another player that comes to the fore out of nowhere. Or a quarterback that just raises the level and says, jump on my back, I got it. And the Cowboys have not, as of right now, supplemented that roster in any significant way. And if the head coach goes into this season with no extra years on the deal, and Belichick is sitting there smiling and having a good time on some Omaha production or on your screen on a Sunday or a Monday or a Thursday, that's how he looms over the whole thing. And the same thing goes for the Eagles, and the same thing I'd imagine goes for the Giants. Because if you think you've got a roster that he can just come in and sprinkle the Belichick dust on, and then all of a sudden you could start winning championships in the 2-3 year period in which he's committed potentially to do it at age 72 at that point in time, you got to think hard and pull the trigger. We'll take a break. 844-204-RICH, number to dial. Speaking of legends, the legendary voice of the New York Yankees, John Sterling, fresh off of the announcement of his retirement, will call into the program the dulcet tones of John Sterling when we return.
Our house is a mess. Come on in. I'm Amber Wallen, internet comedian and host of your new favorite podcast, Fly on the Wallen.
Okay, that's pretty presumptuous to assume that this is going to be their favorite podcast, by the way.
Anyway, that wasp that you just heard interrupt me is my husband.
And co-host, Benjamin Wallen.
Listen in as we discuss relationships and keeping our sweet baby kid alive.
Fly on the Wallen, wherever you listen.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Back here on the Rich Eisen Show, 844-204-RICH is the number to dial right here on the program. John Sterling's going to be joining us in a matter of moments. Be a lot of fun talking with him, seeing what his memories are as he hangs up his microphone. Well, you can't hang up a microphone, right? I'll just turn it off.
Turn it off, Rich.
Set it off to the side.
Our radio audience will return.
Turn the mic off.
Very good. Who's the radio voice that you grew up listening to?
Joe Castiglione for the Red Sox.
For the Red Sox?
Still great doing name. It. He's doing it less and less, but kind of doing the every other inning thing and not really traveling as much.
Obviously,
but,
Remy on the on the TV side. Yeah, Orsillo, who's out here in Southern California.
And Don Jerry on the TV side, yep.
Okay.
Yep. And basketball, you know, Tommy Heinsohn was the longtime, talk about homers, color guy for the Celtics up until his passing recently. So, yeah.
It's amazing how long these guys like do their.
It's great. Mike Gorman has been the TV voice of the Celtics. He's retiring after this year.
Mike, do you remember Jim Gordon, who called the Giants games years ago? He had what a set of pipes he had, man.
I don't know. I was
the only guy who I've heard has had a set of pipes like Jim Gordon was like is Gary Thorne. Jim Gordon started. He did football games in the 70s.
I remember Jim Gordon.
Yep. Who was the radio voice growing up for you? Was it Bob Murphy? Calling Mets games?
No, I was in Pennsylvania.
Myron Cope?
Well, that was like Bob Prince back in.
Ooh, okay,
that was
Terrible Towns?
Little kid.
Okay.
Laney for Terry used to do. Man, I can't remember all the Pirate guys back then, though. It's been so long.
Okay. Well, John Sterling's about to join us right here on the Rich Eisen Show. It'll be a lot of fun to have that conversation. 844-204-RICH being the number to dial here on the show.
Let's go.
Be good times. Back here on the Roku channel, along with the Rich Eisen Show Radio Network, Sirius XM, and so much more. Yesterday, I gave you my top five John Sterling calls of all time in honor of John Sterling, who first started broadcasting in February of 1960 after 36 years of being the voice of the Yankees. Obviously all the calls were Yankee related, but I mentioned Chris as well, because, you know, obviously you live in a Braves household.
Yep.
That he would call Braves games for, he'd spent a decade in Atlanta.
That's right.
And when we posted our top five calls of John Sterling's career, in my estimation, obviously they're all Yankee related because I'm biased, we got a lot of pushback saying that actually his best call involved a home run he called on the air in Atlanta on July 4th, his birthday, by the way, 1985. But technically, this home run happened on July 5th because it happened in the 18th inning of a wild affair between the Mets and the Braves. The Mets scored once in the top of the 18th to take an 11-10 lead. And the Braves were all out of players, essentially, just only having pitchers left. So they left Rick Camp, the the pitcher, with zero career home runs in the game with two outs in the bottom of the 18th. John Sterling at the mic.
This is why you always save a player. Now two outs and no one on. The Mets are waving their outfielders in. The whole Met team waving their outfielders in. Here's Rick Camp with a game on the line. Two outs and no one on base. Ernie, if he hits a home run to tie this game, this game will be certified as absolutely the nuttiest in the history of baseball. It'll be an 0-2 pitch. And he hits it to deep left. Heat goes back. It is gone. Holy cow. Oh, my goodness. I don't believe it. Remember what I just said, if he hits a home run, that certifies this game as the wackiest, wildest, most improbable game in history.
Kemp makes it 11-11, his first Major League homer.
I mean, that is the most improbable act. I mean, if you told me that John Sterling's going to run for president and win, that wouldn't be any more improbable. And I got to tell you, that's improbable. Unbelievable.
In 1985.
That is amazing.
And joining us right now is the legend himself, John Sterling, here on the Rich Eisen Show. How are you, John?
Well, I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Did you hear your call from 1985 with Rick
Camp? Yeah, I had a tough time hearing it, but one thing I will tell you. One, I thought it was a terrible call.
Oh, no.
But the pitch before Camp hit the home run, I did say something out of my big mouth. If Rick Camp hits a home run and ties this game, that will prove this is the daffiest, weirdest baseball game ever played. And he did just that. He was ranked as the worst hitting pitcher in the game. And a couple of weeks before, I was on the air with Skip Carey.
Mm-hmm.
One of my partners, along with Ernie Johnson and Pete Van Wieren. And anyway, Camp came up in a game, and I went back to the roots of a broadcaster I really loved, Russ Hodges of the Giants. And so I said to Skip, well, as Russ Hodges would say, anyone up there swinging a shillelagh is dangerous. And Skip said, well, obviously, he's never seen Rick Camp. Anyway, that's the Rick Camp home run. Now, you know what no one remembers?
What?
He gave up five runs in the top of the 19th.
That's incredible.
Oh, my goodness. So he set himself up for a five spot, a crooked number in the top of the 19th, huh, John?
And that was the game.
And that was the game. Oh, my gosh. John Sterling here on the Rich Eisen Show. So, John, if you don't mind explaining to Yankee fans that are hearing you nationally now as to your thought process to retire after all these years now.
Well, I'm just, Rich, you know, first of all, you had mentioned it on the beginning. My first job, my first day on the air was February 1st, 1960. So all I have to do is say that, and you're going to understand how tired I am. And, you know, the games are easy. My voice, for whatever reason, hasn't gone back. So the games, you know, Susan's the greatest. So the games are easy, but everything else is tough. And you know what? Enough is enough. So, you know, they're going to have a day for me on Saturday. And, you know, as I've told friends, the great thing is that starting on Sunday, I don't have to go anywhere at any time I don't want. So so that's what's going on. I mean, I've been on the air long enough, right?
No, I totally understand that. Again, as you just pointed out, your voice sounds terrific. And so that was kind of a surprise, as well as it coming in the middle of the first month of the season. I think that's what and that's obviously
if I was smarter.
Yes.
And I'm not. But if I was smarter, I felt this all winter long. I had all these great months to myself. Now, we didn't make the playoffs last year, so I had October, November, December, January, February, March. And I should have quit. I should have done this thing on, I don't know, March 1st or March 15th. Not March 30th, because we were already in Houston then playing the opening series. But anyway, I think I've drained as much from this job as I can get. And now, although it sounds like a cliche, now it's time to put my feet up, you know, and relax.
So, John, in your time calling games, calling baseball games, and it's not just the only sport you've called, who is the greatest player you ever saw, John? Who would you say that player is?
Wow, that's a good question. Who's the best player I've ever seen? Does this have to be someone I called or just see when I was a kid?
No, I think it's you called in your broadcasting career. You're in a booth.
Oh, then I mean, I don't know how it could be anyone else but Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter came up to the Yankees in 96, and I kid everyone, he became the Yankee captain without portfolio. He was the first guy out of the dugout to greet everybody. And here he is, this kid, and he became the heart and soul of the Yankees on a team that had a lot of heart and a lot of soul and went on to win the World Series. But to see Derek do it on a day-by-day basis and care so much about winning and care so much about his ball club, you know, I think that's – I think he would be the greatest.
What about basketball, John? You called Nets games back in the day. You spent times calling basketball. Who's the best basketball player you had the privilege of calling action for, John?
I guess Dr. J. And he was fabulous. And he didn't get his due, and he never should have left the Nets. He shouldn't have left the Nets, and Earl Monroe shouldn't have left the Bullets. But Dr. J, I'd say as an opponent, Larry Bird. Oh, the things Larry Bird did to the teams that I was broadcasting. The game in New Orleans when he hit in the 60s and hitting shot after shot, falling out of bounds, and they hawk punch, screaming and clapping. And that was really exhilarating. And, you know, I've done so much. I'm the type who does it and leaves it. You know, I don't – first of all, I do everything by the seat of my pants. I live life by the seat of my pants, and I broadcast by the seat of my pants. Mm. So, I've done so much. Don't forget the old Bullet days and the Nets days and the Hawks days. Dominique, he was a big part of my career, Dominique. And then all the baseball.
Sure.
I'm a very lucky person.
And then what about you called Islanders action? So would you – best hockey player you ever saw that you called, Islanders or not, John? Who was that?
Yeah, I don't know who would be the best player. But we just lost one from the Islanders. We had a terrible year for the Islanders. We lost a lot of wonderful people.
Yes.
And one of them was Mike Bossy. And Mike Bossy was a great goal scorer and a lovely human being.
You want to take a shot at football? I'm trying to put a John Sterling, a John Sterling Mount Rushmore together here. What about football?
I don't know if I could do that. You know, I guess because of his success, Brady.
Tom Brady.
And I certainly saw the games. Yeah, Rich, I'm one of those guys
yes.
who and I'm going to do this now, I see every football and basketball and hockey playoff game and regular season game. I mean, I'm just I love sports. It's been obviously an enormous part of my life and will continue to be. I just don't have to broadcast anymore.
I know. And, John, that's why I wanted to have you on to say thank you for all those years of enjoyment and for everybody who pulled up a chair or sat down or was driving around or wherever they heard the sound of your voice.
Ooh.
To say thank you, John, and congrats.
You used a phrase, Rich, Vince Scully phrase, so mm-hmm. Pull up a chair. Can I tell you this, how proud I am of another thing? No,
sure.
No one would think this. And, of course, it's not true, but I think it's true. Vince Scully began with the Dodgers in the very early 50s, and they got rid of Red Barber, and they put Vinny on. And I want to tell you, Rich, I knew Vin Scully was great before anyone else. I listened to him, and Vin Scully even said, I benefited by a generation of mistakes. And I thought Scully, the Dodgers, when he was a really young guy in the early 50s, I knew he was better than everyone.
Mm-hmm. John, thanks for the time. Thanks for the great years in the booth. Enjoy Saturday, and then best of all, enjoy Sunday. And thereafter.
You know I will. And you and Susie get to town, you got to give me a call.
100%, John. Look for more of my calls. Please do that. And thanks.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Right back at you. Enjoy it, John. That's John Sterling, the play-by-play announcer of the New York Yankees, formerly of the Nets and the Islanders and the Hawks.
His pipes sound amazing. He sounds just like he did in that clip we played from 40 years ago.
Right? From 85.
Man. Blessed.
I did not bother to look up how that game ended in 1985.
Oh, so the guy who hit the home run gave up five runs in the top of the
19th. Game just to take the mound.
That's amazing.
And then the screen grabs that we showed, Chief Nakahoma welcomed him at home plate.
So good.
Talk about a different era.
I wanted to bring that up after the clip, but John was coming on, so I was just like.
And by the way,
mid-80s.
Did you see, that's Gary Carter behind the plate.
Yep.
Wally Backman, who had his mouth wide open as Camp was rounding the bases. Dykstra was in center field.
I've watched
that's a heck of a Met team.
Oh, they were.
We were good.
They were good.
You were on the verge in 85.
85 was the year before the greatest team of all time.
And Ernie Johnson Sr., Ernie's dad, in the booth with John Sterling.
I love that.
K-Corner.
In 1985.
Well, I'm going to pull up the box score for this game.
Ian Eagle is going to join us in the next hour to talk about the NBA playoffs and so much more. That's hour three here on a fun Wednesday edition of the Rich Eisen Show. Still on Roku. You're calling up the box score of that game right now?
Yeah, I'm pulling up the box. So that was a Thursday, July 4th.
But then it ended on a Friday.
Ended Friday morning. The final score was
in Fulton County Stadium,
16-13. So the Braves got two back in the bottom of the 19th. I mean,
okay.
But John was right. He gave up a five spot in the top of the 19th.
I mean,
28 hits for the Mets on that game.
Woo!
I remember one thing I do remember. I don't know why. I know Keith Hernandez hit for the cycle, and he had like 10 at bats.
In that game?
In that game, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Keith Hernandez was 4 for 10.
He batted 400 in the game.
I remember reading that.
How about
like,
that?
Not when it happened.
And he hit for the cycle. He homered in the 8th to complete the cycle.
I love it.
Crazy game.
That's a heck of a team, man.
Oh, no, they were.
Strawberry was on that team. They're ready to roll.
Daryl got thrown out of
Straw
that game.
Straw was 3 for 7.
Did he really?
Yeah, he got tossed.
Daryl Strawberry got thrown out of that game?
Yeah, he got tossed. Davey Johnson did, too, I'm pretty sure.
By the way, that had to be.
Pitched an inning in that game?
Well, I'm sure all hands had to be on deck. Too.
It's like, can you pitch?
Tim Tuffle, get in the game.
Get up.
Mookie Wilson, come in for sure.
By the way, that had to be a very late night. Early morning in Conner's Corner after the Mets broadcast.
Absolutely.
No more Cons Franks were left.
Shout out to Ralph.
Coffee.
Two guys got blown
coffee
saves.
In Conner's Corner.
No more.
Oh, my God. All right. That's it for this second hour. We're back with more in hour three.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.